will be done.
They'll come in like that.
I don't know when. Whenever the food comes, we'll stop. And we'll pick up tomorrow after the next talk. We'll go for about 2 hours. Chris Raymer, yeah. They said 9. Oh. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. Thank y'all. So, here we go. Now, the third inventory, which is the sex inventory. The book says, now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there.
Okay, this is my piece. Where's that mic? Where's that floor mic? Do we have that? Is Bill around? Do you have that floor mic? Let's just do this because it's so cute that we just have to do it. We have any auto mechanics here? Anyone? There he is. He's our man in the back. Yeah. What I need for someone to explain the difference between an engine overhaul and a tune-up. And you're the man.
There's a big difference.
Well, please explain it.
Now, the book says many of us needed an overhauling regarding sex. Okay?
Well, if you're going to overhaul an engine, you're breaking down the whole engine, starting from scratch, rebuilding from the inside out. Mm-hmm. Tune-ups just all around the outside.
Okay. That's good. That's great. Yay. Okay.
Did he say scratch?
Yeah. Yeah, start from scratch, he said. So the idea being that many of us need to redo the whole thing. Let's see. Above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, base necessity of procreation. Then we have voices cry for sex and more sex. They bewail the institution of marriage. And who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. Here's the deal. We do not want to be the arbiter, the decider of anyone's sex conduct. Okay? You ever heard somebody say, no sex for the first year? Well, they don't say that. They say, don't get into a relationship in your first year. Okay? My sponsor told me I wasn't ready for a relationship. Right? You ever heard that? You ever said that? I did. Okay? I did. And then freaked out on the power I had over this guy. He didn't have sex for a year. And I thought, all right. One out of about 28, you know, that actually... The old story is we don't know if it works because no one's ever tried it. But at any rate, but that's in direct conflict with what the book says. It says we do not wish to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. It's none of my business what you're doing sexually. But I will tell you that if you're hurting somebody and you keep on, you'll probably get drunk. So knock yourself out, baby. You know, that's all I know to tell them. Okay. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. And this is a great one. This is a wonderful one. If you've never seen this, we all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't.
All. You mean all?
I mean all. What I say to these guys is, are you a human being? They go, what is this, a trick question? No, it's not a trick question. Are you in the human condition? They go, yeah, last time I checked, I was. I say, well, welcome to the human race. You're going to have sex problems. The book guarantees us that we all do. So if you do, you're in the right place. You're on planet Earth, human race. Good for you. You ain't unique. No matter how unique you think you are not. Okay? We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. And here's what we look for. Where had we been selfish? Dishonest. There's 9 questions that they ask. I have people write them down, or I write them down for them so that they can review it. And what I do is, especially, you know, if you've never done this, I have you write every sexual situation you can think of, especially the one you don't want to write down. That's the one you have to, okay? And they go, well, do you mean like sexual intercourse? And I say, not necessarily. It's like, you know, was there a flirtation? Was there a sexually charged thing? Juanita, and with her girls, she uses misuse of sex powers, which we'll get into. That's a whole other deal. Well, I'll tell that story quickly. This drives me bananas. But we have a huge cottonwood tree outside of our house, and it fell down a couple of years ago. Most of it, half of it fell down, and it fell over some live wires. And the electric company came in, and they're removing some of the tree, but they've got their equipment out there, and I don't know why they can't remove the whole damn limb that fell. You know, seems to me they could. So I say to Juanita, hey, you know, those guys are out there, you know, and why don't you go out and just, you know, just ask them if they'd remove, you know, they're Hispanic guys, you're Hispanic, you know, they're guys, you're a woman, you know, like do the thing, you know, do the woman thing. She goes, no, we don't do that. That's a misuse of sex powers. I go, my God, aren't we carrying this a little too far? It's like, where does this end, you know? But anyway,
I came back and I said, how free do you want to be?
Get. Anyway, so anything that you can think of, you know, obviously, you know, affairs that you've had, one night stands, whatever, a little sentence, I don't want to hear the whole story. I don't want to hear any of it, really. You just have to, you know. But just a sentence or something, you know, on what happened. And then take that situation and ask these questions, okay? Where had we been selfish? Was I selfish? Was I dishonest? Was I inconsiderate? Whom had I hurt? Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Somebody asked me, I think it was Robin who asked this years ago. You're not going to like this answer that I got.
I still haven't gotten an answer.
Okay, well, I got the answer. Robin asked years ago, six, seven, 8 years ago, something like that. She said, what's unjustifiably and what's justifiably? So I asked Don. I always went to him with this stuff. He said, anybody who's asking that question is trying to get out from doing this work. He said, they're trying to evade something. So anyway, it's if you're arousing jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness, it's rarely justifiable. I mean, different people have different takes on that, but just don't worry about that, okay? Just ask yourself, did I arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? There's that one again. We love that one, right? Okay, and I write about where was I at fault. And then this is the one that my little group uses over and over again. We use it in the resentment inventory, but it's from the sex inventory. What should I have done instead? Okay, and here's the deal. Not what could I have done instead, okay? Because could I have done something different, I would have. You get what I'm saying? For years and years, Mary Thayer used to say to us, if I'd have known better, I'd have done better. If I'd have known better, I'd have done better. And that sounded good. It was like a mantra. And we would say that. And one day I looked at Juanita and I said, you know, I knew damn well better than what I was doing. I just couldn't do any better. Mm-hmm. I knew better. I was raised better. And I couldn't do better. I didn't have the power. And she said, exactly.
So knowing what I now know, based on what I now have seen about myself in this inventory, what should I have done instead? And that's my values. That's my value, and that's the value I've gone against my whole entire life.
It's kind of like, what do I wish I had done instead of what I did do, okay? Now knowing what I now know. We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we try. In what way? In this way, what does that mean? In what way? I think it means in the way of what should I have done instead, okay? I look at all my what should I have done insteads. I see what my value is, my morals and values and principles around sex, what they are, okay? And in that way, I try to shape a sane and sound ideal for my future sex life. I subject each relation to the test, was it selfish or not? We ask God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. That's another prayer, because whenever we're asking God, that's a prayer. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given. There's that powers thing that she likes to hit me with all the time. We remember that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. Okay? Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. Okay? I'll tell you a real quick story on this. When I first went through the work, I'm a child of the 60s. We were all loaded. We'd get together in bars or different places and, you know, behave like rabbits, I guess. And so a bunch of this stuff came back to me on my original inventories. And I remember saying, I was fist-stepping with Mary Thayer, and I said, well, I had this one-night stand with this gal, but it wasn't a big deal. Nobody got hurt. I said, I don't even remember her name. And there was this pause, okay? And I knew something was up. She said, this is what she said, the most sacred act, one of the most sacred acts that a human being can perform, and you didn't even know her name. That made me feel great, especially a woman telling me that, you know. But anyway, so then that was a little crack in the facade, and you start to, you know, that starts to let you into it, okay? I'm on a roll here. Don't mess with me. So we've got this fictitious situation, this situation. I had a one-night stand, okay. What were the situation? Well, this gal and I met at a bar. We went back to her house. You know, we kind of fell in the hay, and that was the end of the story, and no one was hurt. Oh, really? Was anyone else in the house? Well, she did have two sons, you know, and, yeah, they were there in the house. Well, did they see you there? Okay. Well, as a matter of fact, yeah, they saw me in the morning come staggering out of their mother's bedroom. Do you think they could have been hurt? Well, maybe. Maybe they could have. Well, was anyone else affected by this? Well, I remember her mother called, and I answered the phone. And I could tell her mother didn't like some strange man answering the phone at her house. That probably got her in some trouble, and maybe it hurt the mom. Okay, well, is that all that happened? Well, as a matter of fact, her ex-husband came over that morning before, and I'm there drinking coffee, bleary-eyed, and he knows full well what happened. I remember he slammed the door on the way out. So then, you know, we talk about extrapolation. The kids go out. They kick the dog. The dog bites the cat. The cat trips the mailman. The mailman goes home and yells at his old lady. And where does it end? You know what I'm saying? My take on it is nobody got hurt. It was just a one-night stand, okay? But when we look at the ripple effect, it's incredible how far out this thing goes. Thank God that when we make amends, there's a ripple effect on that too. And if we have enough time this weekend, we'll talk about that. That's real important stuff. Your turn.
So, sex powers. A couple of years back to the steps, I had this woman taking me through. And she, when we got to this, she, you know, it was a standard thing. You know, whoever you've been in a sexual relationship with, well, duh, you know, it's not a long list. And I said, well, that'll be easy. She says, well, hold on a second. She says, is there anyone that you have been, who has interested you sexually or who, you know, there's just been any little flirtatious stuff going on? And the truth was there wasn't. But then she added the kicker. And she said, the book says that we're not to use our sex powers lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised nor loathed. And she said, so have you used your being a woman? Have you used your femininity? Have you used these things in any way with men or with women? So I went home and I thought about it, and I wasn't too thrilled with this assignment when she gave it to me. You know, I wanted something quick and dirty, quite frankly. Not quick and dirty. That's not the right not way to yeah. say.
Scratch that. Take that off the tape.
I wanted to get through the sex inventory quickly. And I had an inkling that maybe that might not happen. I have. There's a lot of people in my life. I know a lot of folks, and I remember at a time that I'd taken my car to the Toyota dealership, and it was about 5 minutes of five. You know, the guys are standing out there at the end of the day, and they're wanting to go home, and I drive up in my car, and I've got the front running lights that aren't working, and I get out of my car, and the guys come over, and they said, you know, what's going on? And I tell them, and, you know, I put on this little helpless act. You know, can you guys help me? You know, I'm anything but helpless, believe me. You know, but sure enough, the guys helped me. And, you know, so it's like I use my being a woman. And that's what she was talking about. And then she said, well, what about, you know, with any women? And I thought, well, no. And then I started thinking, you know, I work with a lot of lesbian women. There's a lot of lesbian women that I know, some good friends of mine. And every once in a while, I just get a little charge knowing that there's just this little tiny bit of like, you know, hey, how you doing, you know? And it's not that I want to do anything or anything like that, but it's just like, you get the picture. Anyway, so it's like, you know, we don't use this stuff lightly. It's not used lightly because it's God-given. And I don't use it selfishly, and I don't despise it, and I don't loathe it. So that was the deal that Tom's talking about. And I put those people through those same questions. Then she said to me, I want you to write a letter to God. Oh. And that sounded pretty easy, but when I sat down to write a letter to God, I felt really stupid doing it. You know, it's one thing to sit in prayer and talk to God out loud, but to write a letter, I mean, come on, give me a break. But I said I'd do it, and so I did it. So I started writing, and I wrote, Dear God, and this is after prayer. You know, I would say a prayer, and I write a letter to God, and Dear God, you know, here I am. I'm your, you know, little child, and I need your help. Please, I don't know. I do not know what my sex ideal is. Please grant me a sane and sound ideal for my future sex life. Because I don't know what it is. Love your child, Juanita. And then I sat in quiet and I wrote what came to me. And there were maybe like 12 words, 13 words. And some of it was the same stuff that I had written down in other ideals. And then there were a couple of others that were added on. The point being, every time I sit down and ask God to show me what my sane and sound sex ideal is, it's always just a little bit different. The first time I did it, it was about monogamy. I'm a married woman. I got one guy. That's all I'm interested in. And the beauty of this program and the wondrous grace of God is that ever since then, I have never been attracted to another man. He's my heart's desire. He is my heart's desire. He truly is. I know, pretty corny, but it's the truth. So next time I sit down and do this with my sponsor and we get to this, we were talking one time. This was my first sponsor, Kay, and she and I were chatting, and I was telling her about, you know, this guy who I'd gone to the gym, and this guy was there, and I think I was probably like maybe 4 years in the program, 3 or 4 years in the program, and I was telling her, and I said, you know, and he asked me out, and you know, there's a little satisfaction as I'm telling this story, you know, it's like. And so I'm telling her this, and I said, but then you know what happened? The next day, I told him, no, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, thank you. I'm going to take that as a compliment. And the guy's got his hand on the stair railing, and I pat it, and I said, thank you. You know, thanks for the compliment, you know, but I'm married. The next day that I go to the gym, he comes to me, and he says, you know, when I asked you out the other day, he said, and you patted my hand, he said, and you let me down so gently. I went home and I started thinking about it, and I thought, maybe there was more to it. Maybe you didn't mean that you wouldn't go out with me, you know? So, you know, would you? And I said, no, I'm still married, dude, you know? I'm not going out with you. But you know what? It stroked my ego. You know, it stroked my ego. I dug it. And so I'm telling my sponsor this, you know, and I'm saying, you know, it's, you know, this guy's coming on to me, and, you know, what do I do? And, you know, this is about, I don't know, 17 years ago, 20, 25 pounds less. And she looks at me, and she gets very quiet. And I, you know, so your sponsor gets quiet, watch out, because you know something's going to happen. She looks at me, and she says, well, you don't have to dress the way you do. And I thought, you bitch. You old bitch. You old jealous bitch. Right? Yeah. I kept dressing the way I did for a while until my new sponsor and I sat down and we talked about the sex inventory. And she asked me, you know, about the way I was dressing. Mm-hmm. And I realized, you know, and so that entered in my sane and sound ideal. And it was... What she says to me about the inventory, regardless what part of the inventory it is, she says, this is about finding out your values. Not your parents, not society's, not your friends, not mine. Your values. Your values. So I had another time through the steps where I was looking at the sane and sound ideal, and I realized that Tom and I had a great relationship. Really, our relationship had come so far. Great relationship between us, you know, really good sexual relationship. But what I wanted, what I realized as I did my inventory, the resentment inventory, I realized when I looked where I was at fault was that there was a piece of me that I was withholding from him. Even though we had become so close, out of my fear of being vulnerable and out of my fear that if I truly revealed myself to him as who I was completely, my fears, my innermost thoughts, desires, I was afraid he would use them against me. At some point when we were having a fight and he got angry that he would zap me with it. So I was withholding this piece of me out of that fear. So when I did my sane and sound ideal, I asked God to open me up fully to this man that I love and who I want as my partner for the rest of my life. Now, you heard him say at one point not too long ago, I think it was when we were talking about the resentment inventory, he said, how big's your God? See, that was my next question. How big was my God? Because God's got to be pretty damn big to take care of me if he were to whip out his little zinger with the complete vulnerability that I've shown him. How big's my God? Is God going to take care of me even if he does? Good question, don't you think? Yeah. So there was that. Then the next thing, one time we were up at a workshop. We went to a sex workshop. It was a sex inventory workshop up in Taos, New Mexico. And we
sane
got...
Sane and Sound Ideal Workshop.
Yeah, Sane and Sound Ideal Workshop. And we got this little piece of inventory that I really like to give, that I've used, that we both have done, and that I use with the people I sponsor. And what it is, well, he told you when he told you about us when we first met that we fell in lust. Well, we did. I never bothered to figure out for myself what kind of man I wanted to be in relationship with. I just jumped into any relationship. They were interested, okay, right? I didn't bother to ask myself, am I interested? I mean, am I really interested? It was like, I fit myself to them. Or there's a guy, I want him, that's it. Physical appearance, forget, you know, who he is, really. So it was kind of like we just fell into relationships. And I remember a young woman where I live one day at a meeting not too long ago. She said, I went out with this guy. Nice guy. At the end of the night, he said to me, I really like you. I'd like to see you more. And she says, I found some words coming out of my mouth that I never said before. And the words were, well, I'll have to think about seeing you again. She says, because I realized I wasn't sure if I liked him. And I thought, oh, my God, to have the clarity of thought to even consider that. Because my thing was, you like me? Okay. Off we go. You know, into the sunset we ride. So I gave, we were given this.
Remember the Karen G line? I'm a sick individual. Karen G in L.A., she said, pat me on the head and my pants fall off.
So we were given some things to think about. So when I'm looking at who I want to be in relationship with, I ask myself about four things. And the first is qualities that must be 100% present. 100% must be present. Qualities, number two, that must be 100% not present. Three, qualities that are very important. And the fourth, it would be nice if. In these following areas: activities, age, behavior, children, cultural interests, family, finances and money, friends, health, home, interests, leisure time, physical attributes, recreation, sex, spirituality, and work. You want me to keep on?
Yeah.
So, same again?
get a copy of it from her.
Activities, age,
no. Back up even more.
Qualities which must 100% be present, 100% must not be present, qualities that are very important, and it would be very nice if. It would be nice if. Then in the following areas: activities, age, behavior, children, cultural interests, family, finances and money, friends, health, home, interests, leisure time, physical attributes, recreation, sex, spirituality, and work. First time I did this was with my first sponsor. I was bitching at her about something he'd done. And she sat me down and she says, I want you to write down everything you want from Tom. Oh, my God. Now, I could tell you what I didn't want, and I could tell you what he did wrong, but I didn't know what I wanted from him. But I sat down, and I wrote all sorts of stuff, right? So I'm writing. She left me there a little too long. And as I looked at my list, I realized when she came back, she asked me, so what do you think about your list? Did you see anything there? And I said, well, you know, it's very interesting. She said, what I saw was I want him to do all these things, but I realized that I'm not doing them myself. See, I wanted him to be the first one to do the stuff. I didn't want to do it because I didn't want to waste my time. I didn't want to give and then not have him give back. Right? So anyway, that was my first clue. Now, one of the things that I put on that first list was I like to play board games. I think they're fun, but he didn't play board games, and so I was upset. And as I looked at this list, I realized I was depending on him to play board games with me, and because he wouldn't, I wouldn't play. Now, there were a lot of people who love to play board games, just like I do. But because he wasn't doing it, I wasn't playing.
The emphasis is board games.
He plays on occasion. So we sat down and we did this. Now, what happens if you're already in a relationship with somebody and you do this stuff and they don't measure up? Ooh, scary, right? See, I have to write this list without anybody in mind. So I wrote this list down another time. I've gone through it several times. Changes. It does change. And one of the things that came on there was absolutely must not be present is violence in our home. No violence. 100% must be present in the person I want to be in a relationship with. Sobriety. 100% must be present. They must have a God of their understanding and be growing towards a relationship with that God. Okay? Now, when I hit children, now we have grandchildren in common. We have kids who are yours, mine, and ours. When we got together, he had two boys. I had a daughter. And then we had a daughter between us. They're now old, way too old. And they have children. And we have seven grandchildren. And I sat down and wrote this, and I thought, well, you know what? I want the person I'm in a relationship with to treat my blood grandchildren the way I treat their blood grandchildren. And I thought, he ain't doing it. So I looked at this a little bit more, and I'm getting a little pissed off, you know. And I've already written resentment, so here I'm going, you know. And what I realized was, you know what? Again, the inventory is mine and not his. I look back as to how I was treating his blood grandchildren, how I was treating his blood grandchildren. And what I realized as I sat down and I looked at this was that the way I was treating them, I was treating them in a way so that I could teach him how to treat mine. You get it? That is one of my problems as a family member. I think I have to teach people how to behave. I come to a stoplight, and the light's yellow, and they're zooming by, and they're zooming by, and they're zooming by, and I'm thinking, y'all ought to watch me, because this is a yellow light. Stop, like I am, you know? Stop. It's yellow. It's not green. Green means go. Yellow means caution. You stop. You know, you get ready for the red. I think I got to teach people. Who am I? Who gave me that job? Who gave me the job to teach him about how to treat, you know, my grandchildren? The truth is, it doesn't matter how he's treating them, because I was at a place where I was hypervigilant. Now, if I'm hypervigilant about watching somebody behave, you know what? I'm going to find something to fault them on. Every time. Every time. Now, they may do something 100 times, but do it wrong once, and that's what I latch onto. Not the other 100 times that you do it a certain way. So what I realized was that, you know what? It ain't your job to teach. He's doing just fine being the grandpa to all our grandchildren. And I'm the fish I gotta catch. And what am I up to? So even though I write down what I want, my question is always, am I giving it? What am I doing? And I can't put anything on this list that I want to have from a person that I'm not willing to give.
When we first did this, there's a couple of big book fanatics up in Taos, New Mexico, Carl and Sharon F., who were doing this as an adjunct to the Sane and Sound Ideal, you know. And so they do like a half-day workshop on it, and we went up and did it, as we'd heard about it for years. And so everybody was writing down their ideal, you know, frantically writing down what they wanted from a mate and everything. And right in the middle of it, Sharon goes, oh, I forgot to tell you. Everything that you want from this person, you've got to be willing to give yourself. And everybody went back there raising its spirit. Oh! Yeah. Kind of a deal breaker, you know. Anyway, that's... We could go further into that, but that's enough on that. I'll just tell you, when I set someone out, give them instructions on what I want them to do, writing inventory, two pieces that aren't technically in the four-step part, I take and add in. And one is the dark crannies that comes from the fifth step. it says we go to it, illuminating every dark cranny of the past, and everybody's got dark crannies. And dark crannies are just the stuff that I'm going to take to the grave rather than ever talk to anybody about, okay? So we have a special little subheading in the inventory for dark crannies. The other thing I do, I don't know what page it is. Let's see. I think it's 76, yeah. It says, we have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. And so I take that as an instruction, and I have them take one page and in their inventory, in their written four-step, and at the top we put harms list, okay? And so as they're stirring that psychic pot of a fourth step, and the stuff comes up, the little guilts and you know, the little, you're tweaked a little bit here and there about someone you might have harmed or someone you know you did harm or someone that you had ill feeling towards or someone you owed money towards. It just comes up because you're stirring this pot. You write it down on that list, and that's a beginning of your eight-step list you're going to do later. Mm-hmm. But what it does is it quiets your mind a little bit about it. You're saying to your subconscious, I intend to take care of this. It's on the list, okay? And so I put that in there because later it says we had the list, we made it when we took inventory.
On page 67 it says, we admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. So it begins talking to us about the eighth and ninth step. And then on page 69 it also says, I just lost it.
What?
Where it is about, Oh, it says on the bottom of page 69, whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. Then it says we must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. So again, one more time, it talks about, you know, the amends mm-hmm. and becoming willing to do that.
Okay.
It tells us that we treat sex like we do any other problems. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. Then the promise on this is that the right answer comes if we want it. And that's been key in my prayer life. Do I really want the answer? Or am I just saying the prayer and not really want the answer? I don't know about you, but I've been at meetings, and I've dealt with my sponsees, and I've been there myself, where I pray, but I don't get an answer. They come to me and say, well, I've been praying. Every day I pray, you know, throughout my day. And I ask God, what do I do about this? And finally I ask them, do you really want to know what to do about this? And they said, well, I'm praying. I said, so what? Who cares if you're praying? Do you really want to know the answer? And as we talk, what I end up finding out is that they don't. They're praying because they think they ought to be praying, but they really don't want to know the answer. Because if they know the answer, they might have to do something about it. So do I really want to know the answer? This book tells me that if I want it, it being the answer, I will get it. I will get it.
There's a little hidden instruction in here. It's what Juanita is talking about. And it says, in other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. And why I say that's hidden, because if you read it backwards, it says that we in AA, any problem that we have, we treat it the way we would sex. We take it to God in meditation. We ask for the right answer, any problem that we have. And if we want the answer, it'll come. It's another promise. Okay, we're not going to have time this weekend to go into this. I want to throw this out really quickly, though. There's a guy in Redondo Beach, California, J.S. I've been J.S., J is his first name. S is his last initial. And he's a AA historian, and he's a member of the Oxford Group, what's left of the Oxford Group, the present-day Oxford Group. And he's got a ton of great information. If you ever can run into him, he's just a great, great guy. And I've completely forgotten what – oh. So anyway, what he was telling me about, two things that he impressed on me. He said the Oxford Groupers, and this means that Bill and Bob and all the early AAs did this, they believed in what they called guidance, and they kept a little book, a little guidance book, and they would ask God specific questions, and then they would write down whatever they got, you know, in meditation, what came to them. And then they would take the four absolutes, which are absolute honesty, absolute love, absolute unselfishness, and absolute purity, and they would subject whatever they wrote down to that test of the four absolutes. If it passed the test, it came from God. If it didn't pass the test, it came from ego, and they disregarded it. But they kept a guidance book, and it was a big deal with these guys, the early AAs and the Oxford groupers. And a lot of people are swinging back to doing that. They're trying it out. It's I'll just throw that out. I'll challenge you to try that. The other thing that Jay told me that I had wanted to mention this weekend is that he believes that through workshops like this, through the Internet, the fact that more and more AAs are kind of networking and getting together and sharing information, that we're getting better and better, that we have more and more information, and that we have the potential to make AA stronger than it was ever able to be made, because we used to be in these little isolated communities, and we're now starting to come together. And I think he's right. I think he's absolutely on the mark with that. We have the potential to make AA stronger and better than it's ever been through sharing with each other on a larger scale. And I think that's terrific. Is that it with the inventory? That's pretty much it.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
What time are we supposed to break for lunch? I mean, for dinner? Six? Okay.
Is that it? Six? Okay.
Yeah, we have a question. Yeah, the four absolutes, absolute purity, absolute unselfishness, absolute love, absolute honesty. Honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love.
Okay. All right, moving right along. There won't be time to tell the story on myself. Thank God for that. Into Action Chapter 6, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. Mm-hmm. We have admitted certain defects. We've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory, and now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we've done well in admitting these things to ourselves. There's doubt about that. This is the line that always gets me. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. This goes much deeper for me than just the fifth step. When I sit around thinking and mulling things over in my head, and I come up with some solution or great thought or something, and I don't run it by someone else, nine times out of ten, I have a friend, he says, my solutions are problems yet to happen, okay? That's kind of the way my brain works, okay? So reasoning things out, unless I run it by somebody else and talk to them about it and pray about it, it's not a good way for me to work it. I have a damaged mind. Okay, so a solitary self-appraisal of me always falls short of the mark. I need to talk to somebody else. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. Best reason first, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they've turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk, okay? Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. Okay. Here's a little promise or a death threat, depending on how you read it. We must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long or happily in this world. Okay. Rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the person or persons with whom to take this intimate and confidential step. And it goes on to say, you know, if you belong to a religion that has confession, we suggest you do that. Let's see.
there is a rule. It says the rule is we must be hard on ourselves, but always considerate of others.
Right.
We have no right to save our own skin at another person's expense. We don't disclose anything to anyone which will hurt them or make them unhappy.
I'm in a peculiar position. My oldest son is 35 years old, and he did his own share of ripping and running and may still be doing it for all I know. I don't see it, but I don't look for it. You know, I let him have his life, and I just try to be a loving father to him. But I've sponsored some of his friends, and I've listened to fifth steps of several of his friends, and occasionally they start getting into his stuff, like what my son was up to. And I have to stop them right there and say, look, you know, this part you need to read to somebody else. I'm not the guy to hear this, okay? And I think that what Juanita just read is where that falls, you know, where that comes under. To use a fifth step as an opportunity to spring something on someone that they don't know and it's going to hurt them, that's a terrible misuse of the step, I think. You know, you just don't do that. You got to be tactful in what you're doing to whatever degree. You know, you can always find somebody else to read that piece to, I think. Is that good? If we cannot, let's see. Of course, we sometimes encounter people who do not understand alcoholics. If we cannot or would rather not do this, we search our acquaintance for a closed-mouthed, understanding friend. Okay? Perhaps our doctor or psychologist would be the person. We already went through that. Notwithstanding the great necessity for discussing ourselves with someone, it may be one is so situated that there is no suitable person available. In this day and age, that's hardly ever the case. Okay, if that is so, this step may be postponed. If we hold ourselves in complete readiness to go through with it at the first opportunity. We say this because we're very anxious that we talk to the right person. Who is the right person to do a fifth step with? It's important that he be able to keep a confidence, that he fully understand and approve what we're driving at, that he will not try to change our plan, but we must not use this as a mere excuse to postpone. I'm going to tell you, we have time for my quick story. This is a story I hate to tell, but I know I have to. Today, when I listen to a person's fifth step, I read all these instructions. I read right through the whole thing, so they know I'm not making some jive up, you know? And I say, here's the deal. I can keep a confidence. I'd rather have my tongue pulled out than to ever tell anybody anything that you say in this fifth step. Okay? I say, I fully understand and approve what you're driving at. I will not try to change your plan. And by that, I'm not going to soft sell it. If you tell me some stuff, I'm not going to say, oh, honey, that's okay. It's not that bad. You know, I won't do that. Okay? Let's see. Okay, it says, when we decide who's to hear a story, waste no time. We've written inventory. We're prepared for a long talk. Explain to our partner what we're about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize we're engaged upon a life and death errand. So I ask the person, why are you doing this? Why are you fist-stepping with me? What I want to hear them say is, it's life and death. I have to do it. It's life and death. That's what I'm listening for. Okay? That's the right answer. Okay, most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence, and I always tell them, I'm extremely honored that you would pick me to do this. Now, here's a little story. Before Don was my sponsor, I'd gone out to Amarillo to a conference where he was speaking because I just loved him. I adored him, and he was speaking out there, and I wanted to go see him. I hadn't asked him to sponsor me yet. And when he saw me at this conference, he goes, family, all right, it's good to see you. There's some family here. He said, you know, I wrote an inventory on the plane coming out here from North Carolina. He was down with Tom I in North Carolina. And he said, and I need to read it. Would you listen to my inventory? Oh, my, I know, wow, right? It's like Jesus Christ had just asked me to hear his inventory. I mean, I, you know, it was the greatest honor of my life. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I'm serious. I was just blown away. So, of course I will, you know, and this guy that I sponsor was there, and he said, well, tell him to come along too, you know. So we go in Don's room, we listen to the inventory. As far as I was concerned, it was a nothing inventory. I wouldn't even bother to write it, you know, but he did, and it was bugging him. We fast forward about 6 months. Juanita and I are in Tulsa, Oklahoma, I think. She was speaking at a Native American conference called Trail of Hope, It's like not the Trail of Tears, the Trail of Hope. And we were standing around with a couple of past delegates from Oklahoma and I think the present delegate. And one of the guys is the new Joe of Joe and Charlie, right? So there were some hitters in AA kind of guys. And so I'm just casually talking with this one guy or his wife who had both been delegates. And I said, well, do you happen to know Don P? And, oh, Don P, yes, we know him from service. And, oh, I've known, you know, he's a great, great guy. And I said, yeah, I said, I just heard his fist step. I said, you know, a few months ago. And he said, blah, 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 okay? Juanita's standing off in the wings going, hey, you know, it's like, come here. I go over and she goes, do you know what you just did? You just told them what Don P said in his fifth step. And I said, no, I didn't. It's like, la, 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 no, that didn't happen, you know. I mean, and she said, yes, you did. And I said, no, I didn't. It was just general stuff and blah, blah, blah. And but anyway, I couldn't shake it. I mean, that's exactly what I had done. So are you cutting us off?
No.
So, okay.
No.
So, anyway, I went home, and obviously it was bugging me. And I called Mary Thayer, who was then my sponsor, and I said, Mary, this is what happened. I don't think I really did anything wrong, but this is, you know, this is what I did. And there's this long pause. And she goes, that's not good. That was not good. That was a bad thing, you know. She usually didn't talk to me like that, you know. And I'm going, oh, my God. And she goes, you got to take care of that. And I thought, I'd rather, you know, pull my fingernails out and take care of that. So I put it on hold. So I'm fist-stepping. I went through the steps again, and I picked a guy to fist-step with, a Native American guy who was a friend of mine who hadn't done the work very much. He was kind of new to the work and stuff, and I think I was thinking he'd be easy on me, you know. So I go through this whole thing, and then I did this, and I had that, and that resentment, and blah, blah, and sex, and fear, and woof, woof. Oh, and then I also snitched out Don P's inventory.
Take it to the grave secrets, huh?
Yeah. He looks at me, says, you've got to make amends to him. I went, oh, my God, don't tell me that. He said, yeah, you've got to make that right. You've got to make amends to him, okay? So I called Don. He's not my sponsor yet, right? But he says, I'm family, you know, great family. And I called him up and I said, Don, I need to tell you something. I said, when you fist-stepped with me in Amarillo, I said I was out in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I told some past delegates something, you know, what you said in your fist-step, you know? And he said, okay. He said, well, Tom, he said, you didn't hurt me, you know, by that, he said. And at this point, I break down and I'm crying. He can hear me weeping on the phone. I mean, I'm just bawling, you know. And he said, you didn't hurt me, Tom. He said, you know, and I said, oh, Don, I said, I know that this is life and death. And he said, well, it is life and death. He said, but you didn't hurt me, but it could be your life and death if no one will trust you enough to read inventory to you, if you're not a trusted person who can keep a confidence in a fifth step. And by then, I'm just crying, just open. And he says, let me ask you something, Tom. He says, why did you do that? And I hadn't known until he asked the question. I had no idea. And I said, I was trying to be a big shot. And he said, that's good. I'm glad you saw that. He said, I love you very much. Phew. I wish there had been an easier way to learn that lesson. I really do. But what it did for me is I'd rather have my tongue pulled out with a pair of pliers than to ever give up anybody's fist up. Okay? I'm someone who can keep a confidence. Okay? I'm somebody who can really keep a confidence. And I can't tell you how important that is. I took it lightly, and it's absolutely important. It is sacred stuff. It's sacred space. It's really dangerous to mess around with that. There are a lot of people who are trustworthy, a lot of people who can keep a confidence. The way I do it is I use, you know, spiritual stuff. I sense if a person is the right person. I say, God, is this somebody I should be talking to? I always get the answer, I always do. And like I said, there's a lot of people out there who you know, can keep a confidence. Don't blow it like I did. You know, it's really a boundary you don't want to cross at all. And yeah, that's all I have to say on it. That's it.
So it says we pocket our pride and we go to it, which is the fifth step, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Then it tells me that once I've taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. And it gives me some promises, and I'm not going to read them. But then in the next paragraph on page 75, it says, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God. Here's another prayer. There are prayers everywhere in this book. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Then it says, we take this book down from our shelf, turn to the page which contains the 12 steps, carefully reading the first five proposals, which is the first five steps. We ask if we've omitted anything, for we're building an ark. Remember the ark? Through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is my work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? And we haven't talked about the stones, but there's not time. Have we skipped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? So I go home after reading my fifth step, and I have some quiet time, and I thank God. I thank God that I have now seen those things that are blocking me and have blocked me from him, not only from him, but from other people and from being my true self. I go through my inventory and I make a list. The exact nature of my wrongs, it says. To me, that says not only the exact nature of my wrongs are my shortcomings, are my defects of character. And I have a list. I go through my inventory. Okay, I was selfish. I lied. I judged. I criticized. You know, have my list. And it can be anywhere from, it's been anywhere from five or six things down to, say, 30. One of my favorites, one of the things that keeps coming up also often is I play God. I play God, and I read minds. Any of you read minds? I think they're thinking this. You know, what really happens is that my sick mind is thinking what they're thinking. That's the real truth of it. But I read minds. So I sit and I go through it, and if I'm putting each one of those things to the first five proposals, the first five steps, I take the first one, critical. Am I powerless over being critical in the things that I've just discovered in my inventory? Oh, yeah. I don't have the power. Of my own volition, I don't have the power. Is being critical making my life unmanageable? I just saw it. You bet it is. Totally and completely. Okay, the next thing is, and I do it with every single one of the items on my list. Then I look at the second proposal, which is, do I believe that a God can restore me to sanity? My God, the God that I came up with in my second step, can this God, the God of my heart's desire, restore me to sanity as regards being critical in what I've just seen in my fourth step? Most of the time it's yes. Every once in a while I think, no, I don't think so. Not this one. On all the others, yes, 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 no. I don't think so. So I look at that for a minute and I think, you know what? I don't have the needed faith in God. I don't have the needed trust in God. And I add that to my inventory. I add that to my defects of character, to my shortcomings, to the exact nature of my wrongs. Because one more time, I think I'm God. Okay? So, okay, I see that. So I add that. And I go back to it, and I go back again through the list, and then I say, in these other things, the things that I do believe God can restore me to sanity on, can I make the decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him? Yeah. Yeah, I can. And then I go to the fourth one. Is there anything I've left out? Which is the inventory. Is there anything that I've left out? No. Oh, yeah. I got to go back and tell my sponsor that I don't trust God in this area. Okay? So tomorrow I get up and I tell her, or whenever that is. So that takes care of the first five proposals. And by the time I do that, the item where I didn't think I could trust God in, and the fact that I was playing God, I'm now ready. I'm ready. I am powerless over that. It's made my life unmanageable. And I am clear on my first five proposals. What that then does for me is take me immediately and completely into the sixth step. If I'm entirely ready to have God take everything of these, then I'm perfectly clear and I don't have a problem. The first time through the steps, I was fine. I'm ready. God, I am so willing. Another time through the steps, I was sitting at my sponsor's house and I said, I am totally willing. I came back home. I'm willing. Been saying the seven-step prayer. And all of a sudden, one day, I come back to my office and I find myself in tears and I shut the doors. I lock them. I pull down the shades and I get down on my knees. And I say, God, I have been praying to you every day, sometimes several times in a day, and you have not removed this. What is up? What is going on? Now, I already told you, if I really want the answer and I'm in my prayers, I get the answer. And I got it loud and clear. You don't want me to take it. I had a payoff, and I liked the payoff. And I was saying the prayers because it was what I was supposed to do, but I didn't want God to take it. So as soon as I saw that, I said, okay, God, the sixth step says, in those areas where I'm not willing to have God take it, I ask for the willingness. And I said, God, I need the willingness to let you have this. Please grant it to me. And I'll tell you, it came. I had another instance where I came home after doing a short fifth step, because there wasn't much on this inventory, but it was kicking my ass. And as I sat there looking at this stuff, I thought, I lied. Now, it wasn't an outright lie. I just carefully left out a sentence in my inventory. And I didn't want to call back this gal that I had just done a fifth step with. First of all, she was one of my sponsees. It doesn't look good on you. But I knew I had to do it. It's my life. And every day is a day when I make a decision. Am I going to live or am I going to die? What's my choice to be? So I get back on the phone and I call her and I say, I lied to you. You know, when I said blah, 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 you know, to you, I left this out. And this is what I left out. And she says, why'd you do that? And I said, well, you know, terrible question. Why'd you do that? And I said, well, you know, it wasn't much of anything, but I guess I was scared. I don't guess, I know. I was scared that you'd think I was some kind of a pervert. And she cracked up laughing. And she said, I don't think you're a pervert. She says, you're a little weird, but you've always been weird about everything, you know. And it wasn't anything, but it was one more secret. It was one more little piece of me that I didn't want to fully disclose to somebody. And that, to me, is the essence of the fifth step, being completely willing, completely humble to disclose myself to another person, to myself, and to God. So I like to do that list and put it through the first five steps in that manner, because it takes me right to the sixth step, and I know completely once I've done that whether I'm willing or whether I'm not to have God take it.
Just one other thing with the fifth step is that when I'm listening to a fifth step, if a person can't see the nature of their wrong, where they were at fault, I'll try to help them to do that. Oftentimes I'll ask, do you owe an amends? I already know they owe an amends, but I don't tell them that. I ask them so that it's coming from them. Sometimes they'll go, well, I don't think so. Do you? Then that gives me permission to tell them, of course I do. The very last thing is this: once we've taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. And the last thing I ask somebody before they leave is, have you withheld anything? Is there anything else you need to tell me, you know, that hasn't come up? And let them ponder that. And then oftentimes that leads into the kind of call that Juanita made. When it's eating them because they did withhold something, they get home and they call you back and they say, you know, there was something that I didn't tell you. You know, I need to get clean. You can go as deep as you want to go with this stuff. You know, it's never ending, you know, or you can half measure it, you know, as much as you want to. It's your choice. But I'll tell you what I've gotten out of it is the more I put into Alcoholics Anonymous and the step work, the more I've gotten out, you know. And since I decided years ago I want all of it, you know, then I better be willing to put up. I mean, that's the way that works. My watch says 6 o'clock.
The note I have here is that dinner will be delivered at 6, but you will have more time because they will need to set it up.
Oh, okay. Well, let's go on then.
So let's go into the – we talked about the sixth step. Let's go into the seventh.
Yeah.
Yeah?
That's the next
step. So here's the seven-step prayer. When ready, we say something like this. Now, I want you to pay close attention to this prayer because the seventh step says that I don't get to remove my character defects. I don't get to pick and choose which ones will be removed. There is absolutely zero work that I need to do in the seventh step other than say the prayer. All it says is, my Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. Good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Jealousy kept coming up in my inventory as one of my character defects, one of the exact natures of my wrongs, one of my shortcomings. I prayed for a long time to have God remove it. Still there. Now, it was greatly diminished throughout the years, but there was still a little piece of it, and when it came up, no matter how little it was, it would eat my lunch, totally eat my lunch. The interesting thing about it, one day, as I'm looking at this, I said, God, this must be of some use to you or your children. Please, 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 can we please get rid of it? And the truth was, as good as it had gotten and as diminished as it had gotten, I still saw it being abused, and I can't tell you how many times people have come to me to talk to them about jealousy. But the point is that God sorts it out, not me. Then it says, grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding, and there comes the amen. The amen. So shall we say it together? My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen.
I think we've run out of time on the CD, so that should be a good time to...
All right.
To stop.
Yep.
And we'll start tomorrow after Ed's talk. I don't know when that will be exactly, around 10:30, something like that, 10:30, with the eighth and ninth step.
I guess that's it.
Yep.
And
thanks.
We're going to have fun tomorrow because we're going to talk about amends.
Yeah. Tonight?